ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Our birth certificate is our first form of identification, one that we stretch for when we apply for our driver's license or a passport or maybe for a mortgage and when you get married. But there are some Australians, like 88-year-old Maisie Harkin, that still to this day never had a birth certificate until now.
Something now that, you know, I can cherish because, you know, I'm somebody now. Because I didn't think, well, she might be an alien or something. I was an alien. Yeah, but to be identified as a person, it's really important that we are, you know, identified who we are. And what we present, you know.
More on Maisie's story soon, and we head to Albany to find out about the very first All Abilities Nippers program in Western Australia.
They're learning a lot about the ocean, and they're also getting fitter, and they're actually enjoying the water more than they used to.
I'm Sinead Mangan, and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk Country, Perth. Let's head first, though, to Western Australia, where a woman from the Goldfields region has just been handed her birth certificate at the age of 88. Katrina Tapp has more.
In a Perth government building, a group of people have gathered for an important moment.
Hello and welcome.
Maisie Harkin is getting her birth certificate. She's 88 years old.
So I was born out on the country, so I had, you know, culturally, Aboriginal midwives, so they've had, a knowledge of how to deliver children and the treatment afterwards. So for me to be alive now, it's because of what they've done.
Maisie is part of the stolen generation. She was just 2 years old when she was taken to Mount Margaret Mission, southwest of Laverton in WA's Goldfields. One of the only official records of Maisie's existence was from an anthropologist's visit to the mission. Those documents were confronting for Maisie. They showed her and her cousin arrived at the mission emaciated.
I didn't want to look at those records for years, and in the end I thought, no, I've got to be brave enough to look at it.
Maisie left Mount Margaret as a teenager to go to school down south in Bunbury at another mission. She trained as a nurse and spent her career caring for patients across the country.
Sailed through my life without a birth certificate, it really didn't bother me.
But when she went to apply for a passport for an overseas trip, she got knocked back.
So I was very disappointed I missed out.
No matter what Maisie did in her life, she could not get official proof she was born. Maisie's not alone in this. Throughout history, many Indigenous people have been left off the records. Marnie Giles is from the Registry of Births, Deaths and Marriages. She says it can be really difficult for people to get the documentation they need later in life.
That is often really hard to find for many people who are born on country or for various reasons, past government practices, that kind of information can be a little bit tricky to find.
And it's not just older people. A 2024 UNICEF report showed that between 2017 and 2022, an average of 12,600 babies a year did not have their births registered before their first birthday, with First Nations babies being more likely to not be registered. Registration is more of an issue in regional and remote communities where there may not be access to a registry service. Maisie had pretty much given up hope on getting her birth certificate, but when she headed into the Department of Transport to apply for a photo ID, the Registry of Births, Deaths and Marriages picked up the case again. And after 8 months, they had what they needed. Here's Marnie Giles again.
The key piece of information was a record that listed Maisie's date of birth, her mum and dad, and her place of birth.
So 88 years after her birth in the desert, and 88 years of government systems ignoring her very existence, WA Attorney General Tony Beauty corrects the record.
Truly is a very special occasion. Mm-hmm. Well, well done. Thank
you. For Maisie, it's about more than just a document.
Something now that, you know, I can cherish because, you know, I'm somebody now, because I didn't think, well, she might be an alien or something. an alien. Yeah, but to be identified as a person, it's really important that we are, you know, identified who we are and what we present, you know.
88-year-old Maisie Harkin there, and she was chatting to Katrina Tapp. You might see them in your dams, rivers, lakes or creeks, but unfortunately, freshwater turtle numbers are in decline. One of their biggest predators are foxes, who destroy up to 90% of nests along the Murray River system. One research project in the northeast of Victoria is using chicken eggs filled with stuff to make foxes sick to protect the vulnerable hatchlings. Annie Brown has this story.
If you drive 15 minutes from Wodonga towards the Hume Dam, you'll find a wetland that's become a haven for wildlife. This is Ryan's Lagoon. It's managed by the traditional owners from the Dutarawa Dargul Aboriginal Corporation. Today, I'm here to look at turtle nests with Dr. Lesia Pizzato and Charlene Sharp.
So we need egg. Sorry, I wasn't. Snake bite kit. Always. I got it.
That is important.
Where all our nests are to help us locate them.
These are the eggs. They're in an egg carton, of course.
And yeah, that's what we need.
Dr. Pizzato is an ecologist from La Trobe University. She's trialling a new way to stop foxes from eating turtle eggs by burying chicken eggs in the turtles' nests that will make foxes sick.
We're teaching foxes that eating eggs makes them to vomit. Like, we insert the chemical, it's just a agricultural chemical that's already used for this same purpose, to stop birds eating grains and things like that.
She says foxes are a major predator for freshwater turtles.
Once the turtles lay, they'll find the nest in just a few hours. And that's why we say unless you have a fox nose, it's very hard to find a nest. And in our region, they are taking up to 90% to 100% of the nests of the season. So it really gives no chance for populations to recover, and we used to have many more turtles than we do in the present.
So there's been a big decline in native turtles?
Yes, there's been a big decline. Even the common species, a lot of the populations are still declining.
Wow. Is that all along the Murray River system?
Yeah, that's the area that we research the most. We do have other people researching turtles in different states. In the Northern Territory, for example, we don't have the foxes, but the pigs are doing the damage instead to the nests. And it's kind of global. We have turtles in decline around the world. They are actually the most threatened groups of vertebrates, even more than frogs.
Dr. Pizzato's study is based on data from Spain, where they're using a similar method to protect ground-dwelling birds from foxes. The results so far have been promising, with some sites showing a significant drop in turtle eggs taken.
In areas that we can do lethal control, we can keep the population a bit lower, and then when it comes nesting turtle nesting season, we can train them to be averse to the eggs and get those ones that are still in the landscape, so we can use in conjunction. So it's not in nature, not a single silver bullet. We have to find different ways to combine different techniques to get the full protection these animals need.
However, checking these nests is no walk in the park.
Yeah, there's a hip. Oh, a snake.
That was a black, yeah, red belly.
There are 8 wetland sites used in this study, and all of the sites are checked weekly. Charlene Sharp is the founder of a local community group called Turtles or Rubidonga, run by volunteers.
So you know where all they are.
Me, yeah.
Yeah. He's not even looking at the GPS.
Finding the nests is also no easy task.
Best way is to follow turtles around in the rain to find the nest, because they bury them that well that you just can't find them.
So how hard are they to find? Like, are they very camouflaged?
Yeah, when they bury them, it doesn't even look like they've been there. Wow. Yeah, it's amazing how good they do, considering they're pulling all this dirt out, mud and that. You think it'd be a mess, but nah, they cover it pretty well.
And so how many hours are you out here waiting for the turtles to move? And
at rainy nights, probably five hours.
This one's not taken.
Not taken.
Good.
So we have cameras monitoring some of them.
Nice.
Just to try to have an idea. Is this 11?
The turtle is an important totem animal for the Dudaroa people. Uncle Alan Murray is a traditional owner who manages Ryan's Lagoon. And if you'd come out here 3 years ago, it would have looked very different.
We're trying to bring this lagoon back to life. So it's just a cow paddock before we took over. Still get a few cows in now and then to help us manage the grass. And yeah, sort of this area was full of thistles and all sorts of burrs and that, so we're managing that and putting in a cultural learning scape. The main thing with the turtles, it's down to the little tribe. They're the experts in the field, so they've come on board and doing a fantastic job with the turtles. So it's pretty important to all work together for the common cause of protection of the local species.
Uncle Alan Murray, traditional owner from the Dudarara Dargal Aboriginal Corporation, and he was speaking to Annie Brown. The Pacific Australia Labour Mobility Scheme got its start 3 years ago as a way of alleviating the problem of a shortage of workers in the agricultural centre. Under the scheme, Australian businesses can hire workers from 9 Pacific Island countries and Timor-Leste when there was not enough local workers available to fill jobs. But the scheme has been dogged by reports of abusive and exploitative practices, leaving workers undocumented, unemployed and homeless. But as Lucy Cooper reports, many workers are now finding refuge in rural communities around Australia, like Leeton in New South Wales.
Towns across regional and rural Australia are grappling with disengaged workers, labourers who have left companies they were recruited to work for under the Pacific Australia Labour Mobility PALM scheme. Their visas are tied to their employer, so if they leave their job, their visas can be revoked. Since 2019, more than 7,000 workers have disengaged from the scheme. Many remain in Australia on bridging visas or are undocumented.
The government has largely left these workers, these people who've left the PALM scheme, who are in these really vulnerable and precarious situations. The government's completely ignored it.
Kaya Barry, an academic with Griffith University, recently co-authored a report looking into their situation.
We know that there's thousands of people out there who need support, but, you know, once they're formally exited from the PALM scheme visa, it's like everybody turns a blind eye.
But there is one town wanting to change this.
You might see as you drive in, we have a sign, don't we, saying we welcome immigrants and refugees and new settlers. So they know we've got open arms.
That's George Weston. He's the mayor of Leeton Shire Council.
We've got a great heart. We have a multiculturalism organisation who go out of the way. They take them to the hospital. They look after them. They help them with filling out forms at our local library to try and get their visas organised, try and give as much information as possible.
Home to about 9,000 people, Leeton is about 6 hours from Sydney. It's located in the Riverina region, known as the Food Bowl of New South Wales, a crucial agricultural region putting food on the plates of millions of Australians.
We can help them, we can look after them, we can use them, and Australia can use them as well.
Leeton Shire Council is a founding member of the Mayoral Alliance for the Pacific, which aims for better outcomes for PALM scheme workers and the communities they work in.
We're trying to lobby the federal government. There's DFAT and Dwyer and Home Affairs, because all just different silos, and we're trying to get them together and say, hey, we've got a problem here. These people are worthy people, or they've been disengaged, but how about we get them back into the workplace? You know, can you reevaluate and look at it?
Most of the disengaged workers in Leeton have moved there through word of mouth. Seeking connection and support, Leeton welcomes them with open arms.
It makes me really proud of Leeton, the welcoming that we do. Every individual here go out the way to help people. It makes you feel really great.
And it's not just the council which is pushing for better outcomes for disengaged workers.
We get the fallout from the PALM scheme from other locations where they come to Leeton. I will give my 100% support to PALM, but I can't support something where I see the failings that I believe we can address.
Paul Matem was the mayor of Leeton for 16 years and now leads the town's multicultural support group. He's long advocated for greater support for workers under the PALM scheme who feel they have no choice but to leave.
They've said they're too frightened to speak out because they're worried that they'll be sent back home and in some cases been told that they will go home. There'd be a huge void if suddenly they all had to go home. So if we can make it work, we can find a pathway, and we need to give them confidence that they can sit down and talk to not only people like myself, but others that we're connected to within Home Affairs and others to say, let's find a way.
He started briefing the new workers who come to Leeton under the PALM scheme. He hopes these meet and greets where he chats with them about the local sport teams and where to seek help if they're struggling will keep more workers in the scheme and reduce disengagement.
I'm just an ordinary guy, and I just feel that you can sit down and talk to these people, smile with them, help them along the way as much as you can. And I think they have that trust then. And when they have trust, they don't have fear. And if they got fear, well, obviously things don't work as we'd like to see them work.
At JBS Riverina, a beef feedlot, farm and processing facility, PALM scheme workers are a crucial part of the workforce. Inorke Knox Coloni Singer works at JBS as the PALM Support and Engagement Officer.
We believe in the workers' welfare being paramount and very important to our production as well. If the workers are looked after well outside of work, it will show on the numbers at work as well.
From Fiji and Samoa, Knox said his background helps him understand the workers better.
I know their backgrounds because I was from there and I live here as well. So if there's anyone that could help integrate them into the Australian community, that would be someone like me. Someone who lives in both worlds.
Paul Matem hopes these roles and ideas which Leeton is trying to implement will become a model for the rest of the country.
We should never, ever, ever have that a person is fearful for their job.
Report author Kaya Barry is calling on the federal government to implement reforms to keep workers in the scheme.
This has already stretched on for years for some of these people who are just off the grid, really vulnerable, in pretty horrific conditions most of the time.
A key one is mobility, allowing for workers to easily change employers in the scheme.
Mobility is the operative word. I mean, and to be mobile, you need to be able to move from one employer down the road to the next employer. If those amendments were made to the PALM scheme by the government, then that would be something which could be looked upon, I think, quite favourably.
That's Michael Pyers. He's the General Manager of Workplace Relations and Legal Affairs with the National Farmers Federation. He said it would be timely if a review into the operations of and lack of pay transparency associated with labour hire companies were to occur.
If you do nothing and if you just leave it as it is now that your visa is tied to this particular farm, then if the PALM worker is unhappy, they will disengage. They will take matters into their own hands anyway.
The chance to easily move between employers is also endorsed by the workers themselves. Wayne Levy from Solomon Islands said he would never have left the PALM scheme if he just had the opportunity to change jobs.
If I can go back to the PALM scheme, no problem. Yeah. So I enjoy the work. I want to just earn money to support my family. But the problem is that one. Yeah, there is no transparency at all when they're doing the pay and all these things.
Wayne Levy from Solomon Islands, ending that story from Lucy Cooper.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
It's a species that I have been fighting for.
Growing up in the bush is such a special thing.
So when the rain does come, we've got a few numbers.
What
got
if it never come?
Put a feather in your cap.
ABC Radio.
A firefighter from the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service has died after being crushed by a falling tree near a bushfire on the mid-north coast. The 59-year-old man was assisting with bushfire prevention work at Neerong on Sunday night when the incident occurred, about 90 k's north of Newcastle. Here is New South Wales RFS Commissioner Trent Curtin.
We take so many precautions to protect ourselves from all sorts of hazards out on the fire ground, changing wind conditions, ground conditions, you know, all sorts of hazards out there. And hazardous trees and trees that fall is one of those, you know, very, very dangerous things that we have to deal with. And today is just a really a tragic outcome for this firefighter and his family.
New South Wales RFS Commissioner Trent Curtin reflecting on the death of a firefighter over the weekend. About 700 personnel have been fighting 60 fires in that state. 20 homes were destroyed on the central coast, most at Coolawong. And on Tasmania's east coast, 19 homes were lost during the weekend. Many residents are coming to terms with the fact they'll be spending Christmas in temporary accommodation. On the central coast, 16 homes were destroyed at Coolawong on Saturday. Our reporter, Sarah Foster, was on the fire ground on the central coast there over the weekend and attended a community meeting for affected residents at Gosford RSL. She spoke to Craig Saxon and his wife, Sarah Saxon-Gill, whose home was destroyed.
Yeah, well, what happened, Sarah smelt the smoke first, and the 2005 fires I was here for, and they came from the south, so I was looking to the south, and Sarah said, "Nah, turn around and look to the north." It was just behind the hill, and I said to Sarah, "Right, grab the dogs, grab the parrot, anything you think's important, grab that and just get out of here."
And with my mum as well.
And I stayed back, basically because we had a sprinkler on top of the house, and we'd just cleared the backyard. And I stayed back to stuff rags in all of the gutters, which we cleaned the gutters the weekend before. It was fire ready. 100-foot
hoses on each side of the house.
Yeah, all the houses around the house.
Yep.
And so we thought we were ready. So I stayed back to stuff the rags in the gutters and turn on the sprinkler on the roof. And when I turned it on, there was no water pressure. And the 2005 fires, there was water pressure the whole day. So the tank at the top of Coolawong Hill should have been full during bushfire season, and most of these houses, I reckon, would have been saved.
What have you come back to today? Not much.
Total devastation.
Yeah.
There's nothing really that's salvageable. Our kids are coming up from Canberra probably tomorrow, and we'll buy some rakes and rake through it to see if there's anything that's salvageable.
Craig Saxon and his wife Sarah Saxon-Gill speaking to our reporter Sarah Foster about the loss of their home in the bushfire at Coolawong on Saturday.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
We head now to Binnelup, Middleton Beach in Albany, which is home to the very first All Abilities Nippers program in Western Australia. It's one of a dozen new programs for kids with disabilities starting up at surf lifesaving clubs across the state this summer. Samantha Gerling has this story with additional reporting from Peter Barr.
They're wondrous in everything, dive in without thinking. So they need extra guidance, extra support.
Deborah Aylmore has two grandchildren who are part of the new All Abilities Nippers program on Western Australia's southern coast. It's a new initiative, Binnelup, Middleton Beach, where the Albany Surf Lifesaving Club runs its weekend activities.
When we go to the beach as a family, they'll dive in the water and they'll creep out, and I have to call them back in. So now if we go to the beach as a family, I'll have more confidence in their ability and they'll have a little bit more knowledge about what the waves are doing.
It's the first program of its kind in the state, and Paul Bairstow is the coordinator. He was key in bringing it to the region for kids like his son Harry.
Competitors ready. Heads down.
I had an idea probably two and a half years ago about starting something like this up. My son's is level 2 autistic. He was sort of in his own age group, and as he gets older, he was starting to fall behind a little bit because he's not as quick as the other kids in his age group. So I thought about mental health, you know, and being nervous and stuff when you start coming last a lot in races. So I thought, well, let's change that and let's start up in All Abilities. And there's not a lot of stuff here for kids in Albany with All Abilities, so this is a really good opportunity where they can come down here on a Sunday or even a Tuesday for training. They're learning a lot about the ocean, and they're also getting fitter, and they're actually enjoying the water more than they used to.
Surf Life Saving WA All Abilities Program facilitator Bronwyn Meldrum says this summer there are a dozen programs starting up across the state, with funding secured for 3 years. Down the track, she hopes it'll lead to more WA athletes competing at the Adaptive Aussies at the Australian Surf Life Saving Championships.
That is where participants can compete against each other in adapted surf sports events. So that's where anyone in an All Abilities program can go and compete. WA currently has two athletes that has participated in both the championships, and we're hoping that with us commencing our program here in WA, that in the future we'll have more attend that event.
Samantha Garling reporting there from Albany in Western Australia.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
With a cargo of presents and a couple of Olympians, the Royal Australian Air Force is getting a head start on Santa. It's all part of Operation Christmas Hop, bringing joy to outback communities. Baz Ruddock has more.
At an altitude of around 20,000 feet, these elves in disguise have a very important mission. This is Exercise Christmas Hop. Olympians Mac Horton and Nova Paris are bringing the Christmas cheer on board a chartered Spartan C-27J cargo plane with Royal Australian Air Force crew, flying to 13 remote and outback communities.
We're here to deliver presents, cheer and achieve some training objectives out in far north Queensland.
The pilots. So Lucy at the back, you met her.
Co-pilot flying officer Lucinda Branson said it was a cheerful mission. With busload after busload of community members coming to the Doomadgee Airport to get a chance to get inside the aircraft, she's fielded plenty of interesting questions.
A lot of what's that, which is always a fun one to answer to. A lot of small children, very excitable. So a lot of Christmas joys come aboard today.
It also gave the crew an opportunity to practice airdrops, a pivotal exercise during disaster recovery.
A lot of these communities get flood in often and are impacted by things like cyclones, so the chances of us coming back out here to assist with disaster relief is really high, so be able to engage with those local communities in a really joyful way is really nice to be able to do. It's one of the main reasons I joined the Air Force was because it gave me the ability to serve and to interact with the community. I didn't necessarily think I'd be fulfilling the role of Santa, but It's really cool.
Local boys Jacoby Taylor and Emmaus Booth said the aircraft was impressive.
What do you think of the plane?
It was pretty nice.
It's neat. I love it in here.
I thank the army people to come up in Doomadgee and let us take a tour on the plane.
And what's Christmas like in Doomadgee? What do you do for Christmas?
Some families go away to like cities and get us presents, come back with them wrapped up and put them under their trees.
We appreciate all the stuff we get from our parents and stuff.
By the end of Exercise Christmas Hop, the RAAF will have visited 13 communities. Mornington Island, Doomadgee, Normanton, Cowanyama, Cloncurry, Bardu Island, Horn Island, Massig, Pomperow, Arakoon, Longreach, Weeper and Burketown. For gold medalist swimmer Mac Horton, the visits are around giving back to those who have supported him in his career.
You know, as an athlete, you take so much. The country supports you, your community supports you, all for you and your, like, selfish pursuit. And so I just feel like I'm constantly in debt because, you know, I owe my career to everyone that has supported me and, like, to grow up in Australia and be lucky enough to live here and everything that comes with that. I reckon we've got the whole community. We had looks like we had the daycare or something. We had a couple of babies. We've got a couple of elderly folk now, so had kids in the middle.
One, two, three. Merry Christmas!
Hockey player and sprinter Nova Paris was the first Indigenous Olympian to win gold at the Atlanta Games in 96.
Something like this is something that these kids will never forget. You know, we know of the flood devastation that they had a few years ago, where they were totally isolated for a number of months, actually. It is special to come back and to give back and to tell these communities that they're a big part of this continent and they are loved and valued. It's a time when everyone, you know, should look after each other and, you know, check in on each other to make sure everyone's okay and embrace the festive celebrations and let's hope for health and safety and prosperity for everyone.
Nova Paris in Outback Queensland. And that is Australia Wide for this Monday. I'm Sinead Mangan. It's been lovely to have your company. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.